Hello, my name is Nick Spacek, and you're listening to From and Inspired By, a podcast about soundtracks and the people who make them. On this episode, we continue our summer series, Your Favorite Soundtrack, where we talk to our favorite podcasters about the soundtracks they love. On this episode, we're continuing our series with Bianca Brown, freelance writer and co-host of Screen Gab, a podcast where she and co-host SJ watch and talk about recent and favorite films. Their most recent episode focuses on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. Bianca swung by my house to talk about her favorite soundtrack, Jan Tiersen's music for 2001's Amelie. Bianca, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure.
So we're talking about the Amelie soundtrack.
Yes.
When did you first see Amelie?
Oh, God. I was probably 10. So 2001, like when it came out, I think.
Yeah, this one came out.
Yeah. So yeah, I was a child. My mom introduced me to this film. I don't think I saw it in theater, so maybe I was 11. I just know we had the DVD for a really long time. Yeah.
And, like, what's sort of been your relationship with it since you saw it, like, so young?
When I first saw the film, I think the visuals were really stuck with me. But now, I drive for Uber, and I listen to this soundtrack a lot during the day, and, like, when I'm driving people to airports, so there's not this, like, having to switch around between tracks, so I'm like, I wonder if this person's going to find this inappropriate if I'm listening to, like, Aaliyah or Shakira or something. And so that's when I usually listen to it. But I was actually going to bring it up later, but you bring it up now. Like, that's my context for it now. It's like, it just by itself. Like, when I was making notes, I couldn't really think of, like, which pieces belonged with which part of the film anymore. And I was just like, eh. But, I mean, obviously, it just as, like, standalone, it sounds wonderful. So, and maybe it's not so surprising from what I understand. Jan Tiersen, who wrote most of it, some of the songs were actually recorded before he was approached by the director about it at all. So.
Yeah, if I remember what I read, is like the some of the songs are like from his first three albums, mm-hmm. and then like the newer stuff was from the album like he was working on.
Yep, exactly.
Which I think is like a really interesting thing that like so much of it is like sort of pre-existing music, but mm-hmm. like put in a different context.
Well, that's what I thought was weird too, because to me, I feel like so much of the music in the film matches Amelie so well. I mean, not just film, but the character, that it's kind of strange that that just, like, worked like that. So, I don't know.
And, like, when did you listen to this, like, the soundtrack, like, separate from the film itself? Like, when was that, like, a thing?
I mean, honestly, maybe, like, last year?
Oh, really?
Yeah. Or, no, because, okay, please, and it's taken off of YouTube now, but I used to listen to it on YouTube all the time. Mm-hmm. So I guess it was before then. I was thinking when I actually found the CD that my family had, which was last year. So I don't know. As an adult, most of my experience with the film was when I was younger, and so then there was just this period between. So I would say, like, in the last 2 or 3 years, so when I was, like, 23 or 24 is when I started listening to it more.
What made you, like, go and, like, listen to the music on its own?
I have no idea. Well, actually, I have some of an idea. I have, like, a... Oh, what's the word? That's so bad. Please edit this out. I have a film soundtrack.
Like playlist?
Yes. I don't know why I can't think. I don't want to use the word soundtrack. It's something else. Film score. God. I have a film score playlist on YouTube. And so I think when I was adding stuff to it, I was like, I'll put some Harry Potter in here. I'll put some music from Shame in here. I'll put some music from Amelie in here. So I think that was probably what inclined me. But I don't know, other than that, what made me think of it. It must have had a really positive effect on me.
I like the idea of having, like, just, like, a film score playlist. Mm-hmm. Like, what is that for, like, background when you're, like, working, or...?
It's for when I'm cleaning. Especially, like, if I'm going through, like, stuff in boxes, storage like that. And sometimes for, like, dishes or something. But yeah, just for stuff. I have, like, Harry Potter on there. I have a I think most of the Incredibles soundtrack on there, stuff from Shame, stuff from 310 to Yuma, Amelie, just lots of stuff, so.
That's, like, the thing that always seems to come up when I'm talking with people about film scores, is that different scores people use for things that seem almost completely, like, divorced from, like, the original film itself, but, like, when you hear about it, it just seems like it worked. It's like, oh, that makes total sense. Like, I was talking with Justin from Horror Business, and he was talking about using the Terminator main theme for when he's lifting weights, and he, like, really needs to push through. Like, that's his pump-up jam. And I thought that was, like, so cool. I'm like, that's great. And then I immediately, like, listened to that, not while I was lifting weights, because I don't lift weights, but,
to see if it had a similar effect.
No, but you listen to, like, I like the idea of, like, film scores, like, do you use it because, like, the intensity or sort of the magic of it?
I feel like what Justin is experiencing is, because, like, you can have hype music where the emphasis is music, but when you have music that's supposed to complement a film, it's supposed to be underlying, and sometimes you're supposed to notice it, and sometimes you're not supposed to notice it, but I feel like music that goes with a film tells more of a story, and it kind of, I suppose in that sense, it's easier to grasp onto, and, like, what meaning it could have. So I think that could be a reason, but, I mean, I feel like any, like, Terminator, or, like, any film would just, like, pump anybody up, so, because it sounds, like, pretty intense, and then just, you know, that belongs to a movie anyway. So I feel like that could be part of it. I do think, though, it's not my experience with the soundtrack anymore, because I mostly listen to it while I'm driving for Uber. But that it can make you think of certain parts of the film, which, I mean, like, it does for me, but just not, like, properly wherever it resides. Like, I just think of, like, in the beginning when they show Amelie as a child and she's, like, eating food off of her fingers. And there's, like, lots of scenes in the beginning of that film where we see her as a child, and it's kind of, she's just so happy, but it's kind of sad, and her parents don't understand her. They don't really seem particularly inclined to, and, yeah.
What I think is really interesting is, like, there was this period of time, like, in the early to mid-2000s, where, like, French music, like, seemed to kind of be a thing.
I have no recollection of this, because I was, like, 10. But go on!
No. It's specifically, like, there were a couple of French soundtracks, like, Amelie and the Triplets of Belleville, like, that have, like, this sort of very, I don't know, like, very happy, very up-tempo sort of thing.
Maybe, like, even fanciful?
Yes, fanciful is definitely that is the perfect word for it.
Okay.
So do you find that, like, when you're driving for Uber, do you find that the people tend to respond positively, or...
They usually don't say anything, usually. Sometimes they'll ask what it is, and then I tell them. I had one guy, though, I think he said he was a journalism student, and I think he used to be working in film, but then he decided, or at least used to study film, and then decided not to, I think. I don't remember exactly. But anyway, I had La Valse d'Amelie playing, and there's like four versions on this soundtrack, but it's number 11, and it's, I suppose, much more theatrical, because it starts off, I believe, with an accordion. I don't think piano. I think it's just an accordion. And maybe, like, a xylophone, maybe? And then, like, a third of the way in, it just really intensely, it's just, like, strings and, like, these, like, big drums. And he was pretty, like, taken aback, and he was like, what is this? And I told him what it was, and he was like, ah, that makes sense. And then we started talking about music for all. So I think that's probably been the most intense reaction. So, yeah, it's fun, though, trying, you know, different kinds of music on people.
Since you've gone back and, like, been listening to the soundtrack more, has that made you, like, revisit the movie?
No. It's a simple answer. I think, though, I feel like I probably watched at least once, I would say, in the last, like, 6 months, but it wasn't because of the soundtrack. I just own it, and I thought, I'll watch this.
So. The one thing I want to ask, because this is, like, I have, like, very specific, like, times when I watch Amelie, and I was wondering, like, is there, like, when you watch Amelie, like, is there a specific reason you put it on?
I think because it seems magical or feels magical, and it's transfixing, So I don't have a lot of film experiences where I go and watch something and, like, I'm not thinking about other stuff. Where with that, it's with this film, it's very easy to just not think about anything and just watch it. And, like, I'm not super into romance movies, but, like, this one I can totally co-sign. I love this movie. It's so cute. And I just feel so badly for her that she's so, like, courageous trying to make other people's lives better. At least the courage it takes to do that, obviously. Like, if you take it out of its context, like, this is kind of creepy. Mm-hmm. Like, she's just, like, I mean, really, to an extent, like, stalking people and, like, trying to find out enough out about them to, like, change things about their lives that she thinks they want. So I think that, you know, it could be kind of creepy in a different context. But in this one, I think, you know, it takes a lot of courage for her to go out and do what she does, especially when you understand how much of that she lacks for, like, making her own life what she wants it to be. Because, I mean, obviously, like, she could just be like, I think you're cute! Can I take you on a date? And, like, you know, the movie would be, like, half as long. But, yeah.
I found that's... I, and I think even to a greater extent, my wife, that was stealth jumping in a box of records.
Stealth is a cat.
Yeah.
That's maybe not the best name for this cat.
Oh, no. It's totally ironic.
Okay.
So, like, I'm a big fan of watching it, and I know my wife is, too, and, like, one of the reasons we own it is because it's a cheer-up movie.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is a movie, like, I'm feeling terrible, I'm kind of depressed, and I want to, like, feel better about life. And that's a movie you watch. And it's like, everything works out wonderfully, and it's happy, and it makes you feel warm inside. And I think the music does a really good job of mirroring that and complimenting it quite nicely.
Yeah. I think the music does a really good job of, I feel like any film, it's supposed to, you know, inform and help the viewers understand what's going on by kind of trying to emphasize certain elements, but so much of the film is through Amelie's experience that you're really just, like, getting a lot about her own emotions through the music,
mm-hmm.
and so it's really intense, kind of, sometimes, kind of like visceral. Like, most of the time it's, like, bouncy and happy, but sometimes it's really intense and sad. So, yeah, I also think the music does a good job. I did want to say that in doing this, I took all my own notes, and then I wanted to see what other people were saying to see if it was, like, totally wrong what, like, the conclusion was coming to. And it wasn't, so it's like, cool, consensus. But one of the reviews that I read, the man said that he thought this film did so well because of the music, that it is a really compelling story, and it is a happy story, and mm-hmm. it can cheer you up, but that it gets such a positive and long-lasting reaction out of people because of music. That was his argument anyway, so.
No, I think that's a very solid argument, and I think that's a very good, like, it is. It's like a very, I don't know, it's very French. Like, it just, I like the fact that you could almost watch Amelie with just the music
mm-hmm.
and no words, and you would have a pretty good idea of what's going on.
That's true. There's also a lot of, you know, you just see her, like, peering around corners and, like, looking at the person she's trying to, like, change her life. And so I didn't really think about that. There's a lot where there's just, like, no, like, audible, I want to say text, but speech.
Yeah, there's no dialogue. There's
Or that if there is, it's not audible. And so it's just, like, it really is about just seeing the look on her face and, you know, observing what's going on with the other characters without talking.
Yeah. The music is very expressive, and so is Audrey Tautou's face. Like, it's just a very expressive... You can't see this, but I'm just throwing my hands in the air and waving them around, because mm-hmm. it's very that.
I love this about podcasts. There's a few others. Most of the ones I listen to, there's no video. Or they just do video for, like, a small portion, and they'll, like, put that on YouTube or something. But I feel like it happens a lot at some point. People are like, by the way, I'm waving my arms around, or I'm, like, you know, making a face, and you realize, no one's going to see this. But, yeah.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much. This has been so much fun.
Yeah, for sure.
You can find Bianca on Twitter at WriterBianca, and ScreenGab is on SoundCloud. You can find a link to it in the show notes. Our second guest is Sarah Jane, a writer for Talk Film Society and frequent recommender of amazing films on the Splat House. Sarah Jane called in via Skype to chat about her favorite soundtrack, the totally excellent music of 1983's Valley Girl. What was your first experience with Valley Girl? Like, when did you first encounter it?
I was about 12 or 13, so it might have been a little bit mature for me, but my mom let me watch, you know, whatever I wanted to, so it was cool. And so I was listening to that kind of music at the time, and so it just, you know, it just spoke to me. I grew up in Southern California. Not in the San Fernando Valley, but, you know, so this was just, you know, my high school.
Now, did you, I imagine, like, most of us came across this on home video, right?
Yes.
And
it might have been on cable. I can't remember. I used to babysit a lot, and so my weekends, that's all I did was, you know, when the kids were asleep because they were like 4 and 5, that's all I did was watch movies. And so it might have been on there, but for sure, at least every other trip to the video store, I would rent this.
So, like, what was the appeal of Valley Girl?
Well, first of all, Nicolas Cage was a huge crush for me. He's very dreamy. Even though he has that weird triangle hair patch, I don't know what that is. I have never been able to explain it. But also, because, like I said, it was like my teenage years. You know, we would go to the mall with my friends. We would go shopping in the same kind of stores. So it was just like, you know, I was seeing myself. Although I wasn't, you know, these girls are real stereotypes and they're kind of morons. But, you know. But and the music, it's got one of the best 80s soundtrack, that and Last American Virgin are like 1 and 2 for me for 80s soundtracks. They're so good.
What I really liked about when you picked this is the idea that not only is the soundtrack great, like the music really integral to the story as well.
Right. I was, when I rewatched it again last night for, I don't know, probably the 100th time, I was actually paying attention to what song was doing, you know, what scene and things like that. Yeah.
Now, what's crazy is, like, they didn't capitalize on the music, like, when this movie first came out, which, like, I'm baffled by.
That they didn't release one? Yeah, I saw that it was because, I mean, for me it didn't matter because I had either the cassettes of these, like the Plimsolls and things, like, or the Psychedelic Furs, I had Sparks, but all this stuff was on the radio because I listened to K-Rock in Los Angeles, and so this stuff was on all the time. So for me, I got to hear it all the time. But I guess they couldn't. When I was doing the research, I saw that they just couldn't get the rights to everything because maybe they were cheap and just didn't want to pay for it, is what it sounded like to me.
And what's kind of fascinating is, like, even on top of that, like, they couldn't get the rights for some of the home video stuff. So there are songs that were in the original theatrical release that you, like, if you look at the IMDb page, you're just like, I don't remember hearing the jam in this movie at all.
Right, and then I guess Men at Work also, which... It was supposed to be Who Can It Be Now, but I guess they took it out and then had the radio back announce it. Like, that was Men at Work, you know. So, yeah.
So, like, for me, like, this movie, like, when I saw it when I was, like, around the same age, like, my dad was a really big fan of this movie when it originally came out. So, like, growing up, we had, like, that Plimsolls record everywhere mm-hmm. at once, like, at the house, and I was just like, you know, it's that thing where you flip through your parents' records and you, like, you're listening to, like, the Beatles because it's the only band you know. And then right. I saw that movie, I'm like, oh, that's the band. And so it, like, pulled that record off the shelf and, like, wore it out. Was there any sort of experiences like that for you?
Where I was looking through my parents' records, or...
Or, like, where you heard bands in the movie and then went and sought them out?
Because it was ever-present on the radio, it for me, it wasn't a discovery, really. It was just like, oh, you know, this is the stuff I've been listening, that I've been hearing. So I didn't have that. I remember my brother had the Fanatic. He had like a 12-inch. And so I was like, how do you even have this? He's like, I don't know. You know, just... So for me, there was not really that much of a discovery because I was already listening to that.
So was it more of like a really amazing mixtape set to visuals then?
Yes. Yeah, for me, yes. There's some classic records on there. Love My Way is like, you know, that and I Melt With You. Though, you know, those are like iconic 80s songs.
And you basically have like Josie Cotton's only two hits in the same movie.
Right. My husband commented like, what is she like 35 right there? He asked me why she was playing The Prom, because it seemed like she would be a band that would play at Hollywood High and not at Valley High. And I guess he's right, because that doesn't seem like the kind of music that the Valley kids would be listening to, but maybe, I don't know.
Okay, you're going to have to explain the difference between Hollywood High and Valley High for me.
Well, it's the difference between, I can't remember, Julie and Randy. I mean, you know, he's kind of, I don't know what he is, like New Wave, and they're just, quote unquote, normal. So it's that kind of a thing. There's more of a diversity at Hollywood High than there would be at Valley High.
So when being such a, like I am a casual fan of this movie, for somebody who's seen this movie, as you said, like 100 times, like what are the things that keep bringing you back, or like what are the things that you've kind of discovered as you've seen it a bunch of times?
Actually, last night, and this is the weird tidbit, I didn't realize that. Have you seen Just One of the Guys?
Yes.
I didn't realize that Joyce Hauser is in it. At the very end, she has, like, one line at the prom. And I guess I should have noticed it before, but I was like, oh my gosh, that's just one of the guys. So that's something I discovered. But for me now, it's just a nostalgia thing. You know, that's why I love it. And Nicolas Cage, and the music. It's just, you know, it just reminds me of a simpler time.
So, when I was... There's a compendium called Destroy All Movies that Fantagraphics put out a few years ago that's like the complete guide to punks on film. And in the section on Valley Girl, they have an interview with director Martha Coolidge. And I was rereading it last night and I had totally forgotten. Like, she mentions in this interview that originally the band that was supposed to play the club wasn't the Plimsolls. It was originally supposed to be X.
Really? Oh, well, that would have made it 100 times better. I love X.
Yeah, let me dig this out and like read like what she sort of like said, like why they didn't do it. Fun side fact, I actually saw John Doe and X in Zerfinka like 2 nights ago.
I, 1 year, got a kiss on my lips from John Doe when I was at one of the New Year's Eve shows in Los Angeles. So we both have an X connection there.
Ooh. Oh, so... In her interview in Destroy All Movies, it was originally going to be X, but they chickened out because they didn't want to offend their Valley fans by saying they were only a Hollywood band.
That seems odd. That seems like they would not even give a fuck about, you know, they would just do whatever they wanted to do, but all right.
So, as a fan of the movie, like, I was thinking, I was like, how would that have changed those scenes?
Well, yeah, because the songs would have been totally different, and I'd have to know what the songs were that X was going to play.
That is a really good point.
Because this is 82, and so, you know, it's not like they have is it going to be Johnny Hit and Run Pauline? That doesn't seem like, you know, a particular love song. Well, maybe, but I mean, you know, so it would totally change that whole scene, because they kind of, you know, really connect when you're in the club listening to A Million Miles Away.
Which is such a good song.
It is.
Yeah, because that would have been, what, Under the Big Black Sun era? Yeah, and so, like, which is kind of like, I guess, transition era X, because that would have been like Big Black Sun, New World. So, like, that's a little poppier, I guess. But, like, I mean, like, the Plimsolls are essentially like a power pop band.
Yeah, exactly.
And, like, A Million Miles Away is so good.
It is. In fact, they use it twice in the movie.
That's really interesting, because, like, I forgot about that. But, like, if you think about it, like, also, they use I Melt With You twice.
They do, and they use Love My Way twice.
They get a lot of mileage out of those songs.
Yeah, you might, if you pay it for them, you might as well.
So, like, what do you think is, like, sort of, like, the lasting impact of Valley Girl and its soundtrack?
I guess, like I said, it's just an iconic, if you can think of 80s soundtracks that has, I guess, I don't want to use the word new wave again, but it is kind of new wave.
Oh, it's
new. I mean, that's, yeah. So that is, you know, to me, that's one of the first things that I think of when I think of, you know, 80s soundtracks. Sorry, I'm a little bit, I don't know, sometimes I get tongue-tied, so I apologize.
Oh, no, it's totally fine. Samesies. Did seeing this movie, like, did you start, like, where did this come, like, in terms of, like, your film history, like, in terms of, like, where it comes on, like, the sort of stuff that you watch now? Like, is it, like, an outlier and, like, more of a nostalgia thing, or are there films of that ilk that you still see?
When I want the nostalgia feel, I'll watch that or Last American Virgin or something like Fast Times at Ridgemont High. I mean, those are classic and great movies. But because I watch a lot of horror and exploitation now, I mean, almost exclusively, so these are, yeah, like aberrations in my viewing. But because this came early on, you know, when I was 12 or 13, at that point, I hadn't seen, I think I saw Halloween around the same time, and so, you know, these are the movies that started to get me to, like, to really like film. And then I think I was, I don't know, about 17 when I saw Blue Velvet, and then that just changed my life totally. So Valley Girl is not like, you know, which of these ones is not like the others, basically.
So now does it act like sort of more of like a palate cleanser, like something that you can go back and kind of like reset before delving into like horror and exploitation?
Yes, I have I call them comfort films. And so I have several of those that I like to go back to, and or you could call it a palate cleanser. If I'm not feeling good or I'm feeling kind of sad, then I'll just watch, you know, Velvet Goldmine is another one that I go to a lot. Some Kind of Wonderful, though, you know. That kind of stuff.
I have to confess, and this is like a really terrible thing, I have still never seen Some Kind of Wonderful, and I feel like it's like a major failing in like my sort of like film history.
It's you know, I mean, John Hughes wrote it, so it's a typical kind of John Hughes film. I related to it because I was like the female character in that, Watts, who was kind of a tomboy and was in love with her best friend, kind of a thing. But it really does have a good soundtrack. So, I mean, I own that on vinyl. Or I used to. So, yes, you should watch it.
So, what sort of projects are you working on now that people should know about? I know you've got your columns and recurring things for Talk Film Society and the Girl Gang. Would you like to explain those for folks?
Sure. I don't think... did you introduce me? I don't think you did. Hi, everyone. I'm Sarah Jane. I'm on Twitter at BookThis. I do write two columns for Talk Film Society. One is Overlooked and Underseen, where I try to highlight a movie that not a lot of people know about or maybe have just forgotten. And then my other column is biweekly, and that is Saturday Afternoon Kaiju, where I just, you know, I love kaiju, so I'll just talk Godzilla, Gamera. It just runs the gamut of, you know, whatever I feel like watching that week. And then I also just take on assignments as they come. I just published a, or they published for me, we've got a summer camp series where we're talking about different aspects of filmmaking, just like the basics. What is editing? I mean, most people in quote-unquote film Twitter already know this, but, you know, we're treating it like it's you're at summer camp. So I just did a piece on production design and boogie nights.
I think more people should know about PJ Party Massacre.
Oh, yes, I'm sorry. There is the Girl Gang. Oh, man, I always forget everybody's Twitter handles, but it's me and Melissa and Anya and Lexi and Alejandra. And we do PJ Party Massacre. It's every Saturday night, and we pick a movie that kind of is our brand that represents us. This week it's going to be, I'm not sure when this is going out, but this Saturday is prom night. And so we live tweet the movie, and then after that we do a game of Dare or Double Dare, where the girls are in a Slack chat room, and we dare each other to do things. And sometimes you can see it on Twitter, and sometimes you can't. A lot of times it's really embarrassing for us, and we're allowed to delete sometimes. So, you know, the pressure is always on in there. We're always sweating, and there's usually some alcohol involved. So it's fun. It's a fun thing.
Oh, that's wonderful. I feel bad because I know, like, strangely, for the first time in like a very long time, I've actually had an active social life on Saturday nights, which is very strange. And I was like, of course they start it while I have stuff to do. But it's always fun coming back and revisiting it on Sunday mornings while I'm drinking coffee. So,
and well, then sometimes you don't even get to see the good stuff because, you know, it could be a really salacious dare, and then we get to delete after, you know, a minute. Because all of us are writers, and so, you know, we don't want to jeopardize our careers if we can help it. So, and we are going to have a podcast eventually. So if you guys like PJ Party Massacre, then, you know, we hope that you'll support us in the stuff that we do.
Heck yes. Sarah Jane, thank you so much for taking time to talk to me.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
You can find Sarah Jane on Twitter at FookThis, and Talk Film Society is at TalkFilmSoch, that's S-O-C, on Twitter. You can check it out at TalkFilmSociety.com. You can find this show on Facebook and Twitter at FromInspiredPod, and at our website, FromAnInspiredBy.com. Please hit up the website and click on the Give Us Money button to help pay for web hosting and long-distance fees, and remember to leave us a review on iTunes. We'll be back next week with a new installment of From the Stereo to Your Screen, talking about movie music videos. Until then, thanks for listening. I'll stop the world and melt with you. And it's getting better all the time. There's nothing you and I won't do.
Okay.
I know what it is. I know what it is.
I know what this is. It's your fucking friends, right? Shit, Julie, I mean, what is this? It's between you and me, not between the rest of the fucking world, so fuck off! It's your friends! Well, fuck you! Now fuck off for sure! Like, totally!